Greetings and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. It is my pleasure to extend a special welcome to any new club members who are here. We know you will enjoy your membership and look forward to seeing you often. At this time, please turn off your cell phones and other devices. Now, here are some of our other Grown-Ups Forum events coming in the near future. On Wednesday, January 23rd, Gordon DePreez will speak on Follow the Open Doors, How Boomers Are Creating Second Careers Through Franchising. And on Tuesday, January 29th, Mike Welch and David Katayan will reveal winning retirement strategies, how to pay for everyone now living longer. One is a specialist in finances and how to stage your Social Security, and the other is an expert in long-term care insurance and ways to convert life insurance to pay for long-term care. Tuesday, January 29th. These are just two of many upcoming programs, and I invite you to check our website for a complete listing of our events. You may register for these programs online at commonwealthclub.org or by calling the club's 24-hour reservation line. Before we proceed, I proudly introduce you to the groups who have collaborated with the Grown-Ups Forum to bring you today's program. First of all is a sister member-led forum, International Relations, led by Norma Walden. Norma, thank you. Also, San Francisco Village, a nonprofit network of San Franciscans over 60, neighbors realistic about the transitions that come with getting older, and committed to helping each other when there's a need. Further, the International Museum of Women has been supportive of this program, and I wonder, Catherine King, are you here? Catherine, I want to recognize you and your organization. The International Museum of Women is an innovative online museum that showcases art, stories, and ideas to celebrate, inspire, and advance the lives of women around the world. The museum's mission is to inspire creativity, awareness, and action on vital global issues for women. Their exhibitions can be visited online at www.imow.org. Thank you, Catherine. Also in support, the Global Fund for Women plays a leading role in advancing women's rights by making grants that support and strengthen women's groups around the world. They bring grantees and donors together in an international network that promotes women's action for social change, equality, peace, and justice worldwide. So our thanks also go to the Global Fund for Women. We are recording today's program, so please make sure that all cell phones and portable devices are turned off. And now I'll begin today's program. Good evening and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I am John Milford, Chair of the Club's Grown-Ups Forum and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now it's my pleasure to introduce our distinguished speaker, Paola Gianturco. For the past 16 years, Paola has worked as a photojournalist documenting women's lives in 55 countries. Powerhouse Books has published her 5 acclaimed photo books, which bring together inspiring stories with gorgeous photographs to motivate her readers to engage with, learn from, and support women around the world. All of Gianturco's books are philanthropic projects, for which she donates her royalties to carefully selected nonprofit organizations that relate to each book's content. 100% of her author royalties will go to grandmother-to-grandmother campaign of the Stephen Lewis Foundation in Toronto, which helps grandmothers in 15 African countries who are caring for AIDS orphans. Paola's photographs have appeared in Marie Claire, Essence Magazine, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Business Week, San Francisco Chronicle, Chicago Tribune, Christian Science Monitor, and The Washington Post, among others. Paola has been a guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show, CNN, NPR, and Voice of America programs, as well as many other TV and radio programs around the world. Her work has been exhibited by the UN New York, UNESCO Paris, and the U.S. Senate. The Field Museum, Chicago, the Smithsonian Folklife Festival, Washington, D.C., the International Museum of Women, and the Museum of the African Diaspora, San Francisco, the San Francisco Museum of Art. Paola has lectured all over the country, including the American Craft Museum, the Peabody Museum, the National Museum of Women in the Arts, and the Smithsonian Renwick Gallery. Let's welcome Paola Gianturco back to the Commonwealth Club of California.
Grandmothers all over the world are creating a better future for their grandchildren and yours and mine. I first began meeting them when I was working in Kenya, and I was interviewing women who were seated around in a circle, and I said, "Tell me how many children you have." And the first woman said, "I have 2 and 12 adopted." And the second woman said, "I have 3 and 15 adopted." And the third one said, "I have 5 and 12 adopted." And I suddenly realized that what they were really telling me was that they were raising their grandchildren who had been orphaned by AIDS. I met grandmothers who were doing exactly that all over the African continent that year, 2006, everywhere I went. They were so pervasive that I said, I think the future of this continent rests in the hands of the grandchildren. And they inspired me to come home and do some research, and I discovered what grandmothers are doing everywhere. Grandmothers are part of a new international women's movement, unheralded. No one I could find had written about it yet. Universally, energetically, grandmothers are fighting for economic and political and social justice virtually everywhere. Instantly, I found groups in 33 countries doing important work. So I set forth to meet them. I interviewed 120 grandmothers, activists. They invited me into their home. They introduced me to their grandchildren. In India, they dressed me up in their sari. I think they thought I wasn't colorful enough. I don't know why they thought that. In Senegal and the Philippines, we danced. I met these women as my sisters. I'm a grandmother. But by the time the project was over, these women were my heroes. So what I would like to do in the next few minutes with you is introduce you to some of my heroes, starting with grandmothers in India who are bringing light to their dark villages. One in every 5 people in the world lives without electricity. 200 illiterate grandmothers learned solar engineering at the Barefoot College in Rajasthan. And when they brought electricity to their villages, everything changed. For one thing, children could see to study without getting black lung disease from studying next to kerosene lanterns. Another thing, people could walk around in the dark. It was safe. And additionally, midwives could see to deliver babies in the middle of the night. Their work was so effective that those grandmothers returned to the Barefoot College to teach other Indian grandmothers how to be solar engineers. And together, their work drew the attention of the United Nations, which began sending grandmothers from other parts of the developing world to learn from them. I was there when 20 grandmothers from Africa arrived, from 10 African countries. None of them had ever been on an airplane before. None of them had ever been to school before. And because the Indian grandmothers and the African grandmothers shared no common language, they taught by demonstration and color coding and experimentation and gestures and diagrams. Grandmother solar engineers have now electrified 10,000 villages, 10,000 households, sorry, in India. And they have electrified 35,000 households in 24 countries all over the world, in the Middle East, in Africa, in Asia, in South America. Solar electricity is now charging cell phones, which makes it possible for them to do electronic banking. And it is running refrigerators, which they didn't have before at all. The solar grandmothers are viewed as VIPs. The founder of the Barefoot College told me that when they return to their villages, they return as tigers. Grandmothers are ending female genital mutilation in Senegal. Grandmothers are the authorities on family health in many parts of the world. An NGO called the Grandmother Project discovered that when grandmothers are given often just one bit of contemporary medical information, children's health can improve dramatically and permanently. When Senegalese grandmothers learned from health workers that their daughters were dying from in childbirth as a result of hemorrhaging from FGM, they were shocked. They organized immediately to stop FGM in their villages, which was a surprise. They had not only championed that practice, but had conducted it. They sought support from imams. They asked, did the Quran require this practice? The answer was no. They talked to the head men in their villages and asked help to convene intergenerational meetings with young and old and men and women to discuss the issue. First of all, the grandmothers asked the intergenerational forum to name what they considered to be good practices that should be continued. And on the list were dances and stories and proverbs and riddles and songs and games. And only later, these grandmothers were so smart, only later did they invite villagers to define bad traditions, traditions that should be abandoned. Ultimately, all 20 villages came to the same conclusion, stop FGM. And grandmothers today are teaching in high schools about the other two aspects that the villages agreed to abandon, teen marriage and early pregnancy. Hawa Balde told me, before, we were like animals living in the forest together, but not working together. Dado Balde said, if I told you the importance of grandmothers now in the villages, in the families, in educating young people, it would take all morning. Grandmothers are fighting child obesity in Ireland. Convenience foods and fast foods and chemicals and preservatives leach nutrition from food. We know that. There is nothing as healthy as eating homegrown, home-cooked food. Doreena Allen, she's known as the Julia Child of Ireland, and her good friend Alice Waters, California chef, worry about obese children. Doreena told me it's not their fault. cooking skills have been lost. Darina and Alice invented International Grandmother's Day. During that day, the grandmothers teach their grandchildren to forage for and fish for and plant fresh, nutritious food and cook it and enjoy it. Slow Food members around the world celebrate this holiday on the next to the last Saturday in April. You can too. I documented Grandmother's Day in Ireland, starting at Ballymaloe in Cork. There, Darina's grandchildren and some friends were learning to bake scones for a tea party. Do you remember when your children used to eat like this? It's called the blissful mess stage of eating. After lunch in Waterford, grandmothers and grandchildren planted seeds that would produce cabbages and peas that summer. I ended the day in Dublin with Monica Murphy and Meg Wood. Seven of their granddaughters were cooking dinner. I'll tell you something, if I could cook as well as those little girls, I would be delirious. Meg's granddaughter, Emily, proved conclusively that it's possible to enjoy a cupcake even if you're missing your front teeth. Grandmothers are tackling child abuse in Guatemala. There's a village near Jalapa, Guatemala, where the grandmothers told me that fathers expect to be their daughters' first sexual partners. The grandmothers not only report those men to the police, they are teaching good parenting practices and staffing Plan International's child abuse hotline. It's the grandmothers who have the time to hear about the assaults, have the compassion to offer comfort, and the wisdom to offer wise referrals. A social worker told me children and neighbors and parents all prefer to talk to a nice, warm, friendly grandmother. This grandmother agreed. She said, "We are soft, like avocados." This is Natividad. She's 80. When one father threatened her with his machete, she stood her ground and proved that not all grandmothers are soft. "I'd been trained," she told me. "I was not afraid." I accompanied these grandmothers to villages throughout the Guatemala highlands where they used games to teach that good parenting includes listening and smiles and laughing and talking. Several grandmothers who do this work have experienced domestic violence themselves. Gloria De Palma's husband beat her. She told me, "Even if someone kills me for reporting child abuse, I will report it." Grandmothers are battling against human rights abuse in Israel. Every day, 70 to 100,000 Palestinians pass through military checkpoints to get to schools and doctor's appointments and jobs. When they get to the booths where the soldiers check their identity cards and permits, they may be detained for hours and hours and hours. I should say that I don't think that I have ever heard of a country that doesn't train its soldiers to maintain power and control, and delay is a way of doing that. But the Israeli Jewish grandmothers found that completely unacceptable, and I'll tell you why. Between 2000 and 2006, 68 women gave birth while trapped at the checkpoints. 35 of them miscarried, and 5 of them died. Between 2001 and 2004, 991 Palestinians were denied medical access. 83 died at the checkpoints. 2 by 2, 400 Israeli Jewish grandmothers have monitored the checkpoints throughout the West Bank since 2002. They document farmers' products rotting in the heat because they can't get to market. They document students who can't take their final exams because they can't get through the checkpoints. And they document bridegrooms who are unable to get to their own weddings. The grandmothers issue daily reports to the Knesset and on the internet and to journalists. And, surprisingly, they have won grudging respect from the Israel Defense Forces, whose spokesman told journalists recently, "We found that there are things we can do better." Today, IDF soldiers are trained to use respectful behavior when dealing with Palestinians. Some checkpoints, not all, some, have hotlines for humanitarian assistance, drinking water, bathrooms, shade, and areas where Muslims can spread their prayer rugs. The grandmothers are part of an NGO called Maxam Watch. It means checkpoint watch. Like observant Jews everywhere, they teach their grandchildren to fight injustice and prejudice and to treat others as they would want to be treated. Hanna Barag took me to checkpoints all over the West Bank. The work that these grandmothers do is courageous and controversial. Soldiers in their own families don't support it. But these Israeli grandmothers have just won the highest award given by the Association for Civil Rights in Israel. Grandmothers are working against illiteracy in Argentina. Even in a world where people read on Kindles and iPads, many children are still illiterate. And that's especially true in Argentina, where between 1976 and 1983, the military dictatorship burned books, bombed journalists' offices, looted libraries, killed authors, journalists, and intellectuals. Terrified, the people in Argentina, which had the highest literacy rate in all of South America, the people in Argentina stopped reading. Years later, hoping to re-engage the children with books, the Mempo Giardinelli Foundation asked grandmothers to read aloud to them. The grandmothers inspired so many to learn to read that their program, which is called the Storytelling Grandmothers, has been incorporated into the national school curriculum, and it's been copied by 7 other countries. Today, the Storytelling Grandmother program in Argentina includes some 2,000 grandmothers. They are each assigned to a classroom where they read every week. Good literature and unconditional love, it turns out, jet propels children's love of books and reading. Silvia DeVici, who is here in black, told me, "When I retired, I asked myself, what will I do with all of my diplomas and training and experience? Where will they go? Into a box?" This work, she said, has opened new worlds. Another grandmother, Maria Alicia Assane, reflected on the children's reactions, the shine in their eyes, she said, their smiles. "Those things fill my soul with joy. Reading," she said, "is an act of love. Reading is a party." Grandmothers are fighting for justice in the Philippines. During World War II, this church in Manila was a brothel. The Japanese army kidnapped an adolescent girl to provide sex to every 100 soldiers. 30 garrisons in the Philippine Islands doubled as comfort stations where sex slaves were imprisoned between 1942 and 1945. They were forced to serve as many as 10 men a night, as this woman was. For 50 years, comfort women hid their shameful histories, even from their husbands and their children. And then a woman named Maria Rosa Henson went on television in Manila and told her story, told her untellable story, and asked other comfort women to join her to fight for their rights. The grandmothers transformed their shame into political action. In 1993, they filed a class action suit against the Japanese government. They demanded a formal apology. They demanded reparations. And they demanded a place in the history books so this wouldn't happen again. After 10 years, the Supreme Court of Japan rejected the case. They didn't give up. Most of them are now in their 80s and 90s, but they demonstrate in the streets. They speak at universities, they collect signatures on petitions, and sometimes, in the afternoons, in their bungalow, they dance and do karaoke, as they did when I was there. By the way, the bungalow was purchased for them by sympathetic Japanese citizens. Their fight will not end when they die. They are building international support to help women and girls everywhere keep safe from sexual violence. It's crucial, Narcissa told me. The whole world must fight for the next generation. Grandmothers are fighting environmental degradation in Thailand. When Thongabai Pongtawang works at her loom, she sees a beautiful mountain. And on the other side of that mountain, she knows that a mining company is excavating for gold. Rivers are now contaminated with dangerous levels of cadmium, arsenic, lead, and manganese. When locals took blood tests, 63% of the samples contained cyanide and 100% contained mercury and lead. Thongabai's grandmother group, which grows and dyes and spins and weaves organic cotton, decided that they would donate some of their profits to the neighboring villagers who suddenly had to buy food and water, which they had never done before. They also traveled from Luoyang province, which is in the northeast, to Bangkok, to talk with government officials. They cited the Constitution and made what I thought was a uniquely Buddhist argument. It was based on morality and compassion and the interconnectedness of government officials and their constituents. I have heard that the Thai government has refused to renew the gold mining company's lease. I hope that's true. And I hope that children like these will live for a long time and continue to wear the organic cotton jackets that their grandmothers make for them. Grandmothers are raging against political affection in the United States. A complacent public results in a flaccid democracy, we know that. That's why the raging grannies don flowery hats and dowdy aprons and write witty lyrics and stage playful protests, all to earn media attention and enhance awareness of the issues that they believe will be either good for or bad for their grandchildren. There are 60 granny gaggles now in 5 countries. There may be granny gaggles in this very audience. I documented the San Francisco Bay Area Raging Grannies Action League. This is Granny Gale. She writes their lyrics. She continued to agitate from her disability's scooter despite 2 hip replacements. This is Ruth Robertson. She has a collection of aprons in her upstairs hall and a collection of frumpy hats in her dining room. She tells potential members, you don't even have to be a grandmother. All you have to be is a woman who's willing to wear a funny hat. All over the world, when I mentioned grandchildren, grandmothers grabbed their pictures and told me stories. And Barbara Baxter Berman told me that when her 10-year-old granddaughter comes to visit, they climb up on the roof of her cottage and pick persimmons off the tree. I thought raging grannies may rage, but they have big hearts. Indigenous grandmothers pray for peace and for the earth. An optimistic shared prophecy connects many indigenous people, and it promises that women from the 4 directions will awaken the world. The International Council of 13 Indigenous Grandmothers, they are all healers and shamans, hold public meetings every 6 months, where each one conducts a ceremony according to her own traditions to heal the environment and to pray for peace. I interviewed and photographed them in Sedona, Arizona. Jyoti first convened these grandmothers in the year 2004. The 13 indigenous grandmothers have prayed at St. Peter's, and they've had an audience with the Dalai Lama in Dharamsala, India. They've helped get water issues on the United Nations agenda and preserve sacred sites around the world. They've represented indigenous voices in many international summits. Their commitment statement says, "We believe that the teaching of our ancestors will light our ways through an uncertain future." Grandmothers are demanding justice in Argentina. Military and police officers tortured and murdered some 30,000 people during the military dictatorship in Argentina that we were talking about a few minutes ago. And then they stole their infants and toddlers because they considered them to be educable. Ever since, the children's grandmothers have pretended to be maids just to get into houses where they'd heard their children, grandchildren might be living. They pretend to sit in the park, knitting, while in fact they are discussing their next moves. The grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo, not the mothers of the Plaza de Mayo, the grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo, commissioned a geneticist. She was here at Berkeley at that point. Her name is Marie Claire King. And she developed a test to prove that the grandmothers were related to their grandchildren whom they had never met. Elsa de Aguilar's granddaughter, Paula Logares, was the first grandchild identified by genetic testing, and 104 others have followed. Between 400 and 500 children were abducted. The grandmother's search continues. Grandmothers are recapturing traditions in Peru. In many cultures, grandmothers sustain tradition, and in Peru, they saved one. Traditional Inca weaving patterns and dyeing processes were lost. No one remembered how to do traditional weaving. The ancestors had been betrayed, and no one wore traditional clothing. Nilda Calañapa founded the Center for Traditional Textiles of Cusco to bring back traditional weaving. She told me only the grandmothers knew the vocabulary, the meanings, the patterns, and the technical information about dyes and looms. She arranged for local high school students to interview their grandmothers about their grandmothers' weaving. And little by little, Nilda and the grandmothers collected enough information to begin teaching traditional weaving again. Today, people in the Sacred Valley of the Incas wear traditional clothing with great pride. My last two stories are about the Stephen Lewis Foundation's Grandmothers to Grandmothers campaign, which is helping grandmothers all over Africa in 15 countries who are raising children orphaned by AIDS. As you heard from John, 100% of my author royalties from Grandmother Power support their important work. The foundation coordinates 240 groups of activist grandmothers all over Canada. For the past 6 years, the grannies have raised $16.5 million and have sent a continuous flow of small cash grants directly to the grandmothers' groups in Africa who make grant applications. They represent the 8,000 Stephen Lewis grandmothers. I photographed the grandmothers and grandothers of Barrie, Ontario. These women will do almost anything to raise money. They will cater weddings. They will sell ice cream at the beach. Ask them to do it. I bet they will. When I was there, they were making crafts for a holiday gift fair, teddy bears and dolls and sweaters and art and wreaths. They set up their booth, and when they did, it was swamped. Just watch. When they counted their money at the end of the day, they had earned so much more than they had imagined they could that they broke into a gratitude dance. Do you know the gratitude dance? Anybody? I could teach you later. We have much to be grateful for. These women are grateful for more than money. Joanne O'Shea, who is wearing the red jacket here, sent me off with these words. When you meet the grandmothers in South Africa, tell them, she said, what a gift they are to us. For us, every day is Thanksgiving. Finally, the grandmothers in South Africa. Although South Africa has the highest rate of HIV/AIDS in the world, Swaziland has the highest rate of AIDS in the world. South Africa has the most infected people, 5.6 million. Grandmothers Against Poverty and AIDS, GAPA for short, is an NGO in Khayelitsha Township near Cape Town. Gangs and crime are rampant there. GAPA, The Stephen Lewis Foundation partner is run by grandmothers for grandmothers. 80% of all the GAPA grandmothers care for children who have been orphaned by AIDS. 30% care for another relative who has AIDS. 15% of them are HIV positive themselves. Made me so sad to think about these women and their lives that when I asked the first woman, "How are you doing?" I braced for her answer. Nothing prepared me for the response I got. "I feel strong," she said. I'll tell you something. These grandmothers can do more to help each other than any outsider ever could. GAPA grandmothers started an after-school program. It's the only one in Galicia. School gets out at 1 p.m. and within minutes, 135 boys and girls who are hungry swarm in for lunch. The children climb over the playground, all over the playground equipment, which was purchased, by the way, with money sent by the Canadian grandmothers. And they are laughing and playing and shouting. The grandmothers teach each other craft skills so they can earn money to feed the children. This is Rita. Rita learned how to make hats. She told me, "People call me Hats Mama." There's bread in the house. There are eggs in the house. I've got something in my purse. I've got power. Which brings me to the subject of grandmother power. Sometimes, but not now, my dress lights up. Pretend. We'll try it again in a minute. Grandmother power. Where does it come from? I'll tell you my theories. First of all, there are more grandmothers right now on the face of the planet than there have ever been in the history of the earth. They are younger than they have ever been, thanks in part to the influx of boomers. There are some 42 million grandmothers in the United States alone right now. 4,000 more every day. They are healthier than they've ever been, thanks to improved medical care. All of these, and they are better educated than they have ever been. They also, in the Northern Hemisphere, have work experience, professional experience. And all of them, all of those whom I talked with and many whom I've read about and talked with since, say, the world, this troubled world, is just not good enough for my grandchildren. So this force of energetic, effective grandmothers has mobilized. And worldwide, there is now an international grandmother movement. They're not just changing the world. They're teaching their grandchildren by their activities. Threaded throughout all of these stories are attributes that I think are important to teach, like generosity and collaboration, patience and perseverance, resilience. Think about those stories. You'll see all of those traits. If you want updates on this project and on the grandmother groups in the book, please go to www.globalgrandmotherpower.com. The website is full of all kinds of information, multimedia, videos of these grandmother projects, pictures that didn't fit in the book. Books never have enough pages for all the pictures I want to put in them. It also has information that may be interesting to you, specifically if you are interested in becoming part of the grandmother movement. There's a section called Show Your Power, and it lists 33 countries worth of grandmother groups in case you want to start a group or join a group or support a group or network with other grandmother groups. They are all online and you can find them very easily. I hope you will. I am convinced to my shoe tops that it will take all of us, grandmothers and grandothers, to create hope and possibility for our world. I know many of you are already involved locally and nationally and internationally. But if you're not, think about the grandmothers movement and think about joining it too. So I salute you for your important work, and I thank you for inviting me here today.
We'd like to remind our listening audience that this is a program with the Commonwealth Club of California, and you are listening to Grandmother Power, a Global Phenomenon, with the amazing Paola Janturco. I know there will be questions in the audience. We have a mic. It's placed here so that your question can be heard. So please, how many have questions? Please come up to the mic so your question can be heard by the listening audience. I invite you. And Paola, I presume you will answer.
You bet. I'll do my best.
I'm Norma Walden, the International Relations Forum partner person, and I actually have two related questions. I wonder how the grandmothers are typically organized. Do they actually have officers and so forth and recruit people? And then I wondered if there are any childless or child-free women who join this as well.
Ah, interesting. Let me take the last question first. There are many women who have joined grandmother groups. There are many women, for example, in the Raging Grannies who are neither grannies nor even mothers. One told me she had a grand dog. So there are also grand others in many of these groups, men and women who don't have grandchildren or children in their own families. How are they organized, and do they have officers? Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't. The Grandmothers Against Poverty and AIDS, for example, in South Africa, are very organized in terms of titles, but they trade the titles very often. So somebody is president for 3 months, and then somebody else is president, and it is not a very hierarchical structure. In fact, I didn't see a hierarchical structure anyplace. And many of these groups, there may be a kind of rotating chairmanship, but often there really is not a formal structure as we might expect there to be if we think about patriarchal structure. So often it's more informal than that.
Hello, my name is Leanne Grossman. I'm currently a student at Merritt College in Environmental Management. First, Paola, I have to thank you for sharing with us the humanity that I think we all feel that comes through your images. But my question is about Israel, and I wonder how you were able to take photos at the security checkpoints and whether some were perhaps not legitimate and others, did you get approval or you know, have to get a signed paper?
Whatever. Leanne knows that I always ask before I take pictures. I did not ask. I just took them. I figured I was there as a guest of the grandmothers who belonged to Moksum Watch. And if they said it was okay, it was okay. They themselves had taken videos at the checkpoints and have done a documentary that you will find if you go to the website, globalgrandmotherpower.com, you can see that documentary as well, or a trailer from that documentary. So I am sure that I wasn't supposed to do that. Most countries have rules against that, and I'm very careful about it. But I was not careful about it there. I thought it was really important to document. Nobody's asked me that question.
Hi, Paola. My name is Liz Weld-Nolan. I'm a grandmother and a writer. And I have been thinking for a long time, I am passionately in favor of helping women and girls around the world change the way they are in a society and to have a patriarchal society change. But there's also a lot of pain for men and boys. I feel it's hard for boys to know how to be a man in many societies now. And I wonder about your, would you tell us your thoughts on how to help boys, how to help men as they change their roles? And do you have many grandfathers in your group?
That's a hard question. I've had my eyes on grandmother, so I'm not a grandfather expert, although I live with one. You're right. That's an important issue. And there are some grandfathers involved. Women live longer than men. We know that. In Argentina, there used to be an organization of grandfathers of the Plaza de Mayo. There are now only four left in that group. I was actually really surprised in Africa not to see men in the groups. I think it's because AIDS is so prevalent that I was told it was because the men in those villages weren't there, that they had died. Because in Africa, in all of the NGOs where I've done documentary photography, there are always, even in the groups that are run by women, there are always African men in those groups in the past. They feel it's very important, even under the most unlikely seeming circumstances. For example, the Girl Child Network in Zimbabwe, run by a woman named Betty McConey, who won a CNN Heroes Prize, had always included men in her organization because she thought it was so important to have men as male role models, particularly in the environment in which she was working, which was with little girls who had been raped. She always had men who were themselves born of rape or whose sisters or mothers had been raped so that they would be sensitive to the issues. But in this case, with the grandmothers who were taking care of AIDS orphans, they really were the one remaining adult in the family who could take on the responsibility of the children in the places where I went.
Hi, Paula. I'm Sandy Smith with the Women's Foundation of California. Paula, I love, love, love your stories and the photos. I really appreciate it. From the time I was young, I've always loved seeing examples of being older in a way that's inspiring as opposed to scary, so thank you. Really appreciate it. I have two questions. One is, are you connecting with people like Mary Catherine Bateson, who recently wrote a book called Composing a Further Life? Listening to this makes me think she would love to know what you're doing. And also, how is making photo books different in this day and time than it was when you first started making them with Kindles,
etc.? What interesting question. If you know Mary Catherine Bateson, introduce me. I would love to meet that woman. I've actually used Composing a Life as part of a reader for a course that I taught at one point. I have a great deal of respect for her, and I'm absolutely open to meeting her. How is it different now? One thing that's different is that I don't have to buy film and pay for processing. And in fact, you're kind of smiling about that, but in reality it is that plus my United Airlines frequent flyer miles that make it possible to do these books.
And how about distributing? How is that different, sharing?
For the first time, the publisher has released ebook copies of this book. It's available both for iPads and Kindle Fires and Nooks, as well as available in hard copy. Some of them out in the lobby. I would be happy to sign them later. And if they run out of books, they'll order more. Thanks. I should say, while we're talking about how I do these books, that there are people in this audience who, without whom I could never do these books. One is Marge DeWild, right here, who has done the website. And I just saw Liz Spander, who is my remarkable and astonishing travel agent, who somehow manages to get me to places that I think nobody else has ever wanted to go to. Yes.
Hi, I'm Denise Terry. I'm a mother of young twins, and unfortunately my grandmothers are no longer alive, so they've never met their great-grandmothers. But my question really is around, you've interviewed all these grandmothers around the world who live in communities where they're very much in physical proximity with their own grandchildren. But we live in a culture here where grandmothers don't often get the benefit of even getting to know their grandchildren on a daily basis. So what advice do you have to mothers and grandmothers in our culture to allow us to capture that collective wisdom from our grandmothers for future generations? Are there technologies we can use or projects that you're working on digitally to capture that, to share for future generations?
I actually almost included a chapter about exactly that. Many grandmothers and grandfathers are doing Skype bedtime stories with their grandchildren. And I was very interested in exploring the many ways that grandparents are connecting with their long-distance grandchildren. I was also interested, I was talking with a woman named Yeshi Newman, who was a midwife. Maybe she delivered some of your babies or grandbabies. And she is currently conducting a series of workshops. The next one, February at Esalen, is about exactly this issue. What is grandmothering like this at this point in time? And helping people invent new ways to think about grandmothering. Thanks.
Good evening. My name is Carol Yates, and I'm the proud grandmother of Nikolai and Mila. And thank you for the enormous effort that you put into the travels to get these interviews and the poignant information. I waited with great anticipation to hear what the American grandmothers are doing that could possibly come close to the tremendous work done by the other grandmothers around the world. And the frivolous images just didn't offer enough. What can you say something more about what American grandmothers are doing besides donning these wild hats?
The grandmothers look frivolous. The raging grannies look frivolous, but their issues are very serious. And without their disguises, they of course are making a joke out of the stereotypical old grandmother. In order to get press attention for the issues. And so you will find in the book, for example, some of their songs, which are very funny and entertaining. As one of them told me, our job is to entertain people so much that they will remember something about these issues, which are actually very serious and important issues. There are other really important things that are going on with grandmother groups here, one of which is Global Grandmothers. This is Diana McDonough. She has just this last couple of years started a new online grandmother organization. She lives in Sonoma. Thank you for coming so far. She had a wonderful idea, I think, and her idea is that each time we give something to our grandchildren, to Nikolai and Mila, for me, to Avery and Alex, we should give something to a child in need. And so her organization vets organizations that are helping children all around the world, so that you're sure that the money actually gets there, so you know that that's an upfront organization. It's a wonderful idea. There are on globalgrandmotherpower.com a whole list of organizations in the United States as well as all over the world. So take a look. There are lots of ideas there.
Thank you.
While you're coming up, I'm going to thank some more people. This is Bill Robertson, who is founder of INCA, which takes people to Peru. I'm on their board, and he introduced me to Nilda Kalanyapa. And here in the front row are Susan Krieger and Estelle Friedman, who were my expert readers for several of the chapters because they are teaching women's studies at Stanford and women's history at Stanford and were a huge help to me. Yes?
Hi, Paula. I'm Tara Moore. I'm a writer on women's leadership. And I'm wondering, looking at all these different places, did you see any patterns about the cultural context or the situations where grandmother groups rose up and where they didn't?
Thank you. I don't know if you know Tara. You should be reading Tara's blog. Tara also teaches a wonderful course called Playing Big. just in case as grandmothers or grandothers you want to think about that. See Tara. Some places grandmothers are revered in their cultures. Most frequently they are revered in their own families. It's not always true that they are revered in their communities. And in some communities they are in fact virtually outlawed. In Ghana and in Mauritania, for example, they are often kept in enclosures which they call witch camps. The idea of crone and witch is not new. But this is an extreme example of that. They send a young girl out to feed the grandmothers once a day. So, for example, the grandmother project, which I talked about working in Senegal with the grandmothers who wanted to end FGM, found that although there that kind of discrimination is not as extreme in Senegal, they had to buttress the grandmother's position in the communities before they could be heard. So they invited them into the schools to teach traditions and proverbs and stories and riddles and so forth to the children, and very quickly they came to be seen as a real resource. And only then could they then take the actions that they did to change early marriage and early pregnancy in FGM. So the cultural impact is huge, and the involvement of cultural anthropologists is often very effective in moving these projects forward.
Hi, Paola. So I do want to say that our brochures are out in front, which I'm sure many of you have, and there's a sign-up sheet I have, and Kate, who's also on our board, who's from Redwood City, and she has a sign-up sheet. So we're very happy to take your names and your emails. But then I wanted to ask a question, because I've been to this presentation before, and such an interesting answer, I thought you shouldn't miss it. You talk about how you've interviewed all these women, and presumably you don't know all of their languages. And I'm just wondering, how did you make that happen, and do they get to see what you're writing about them, and so on?
I always go to visit groups that agree ahead of time to be part of my books. So there is someone whom I will have talked to, probably via email. And when I get there and begin talking with the women in the groups, I always show them my old books because I want them to know exactly what they're getting into. And I describe my vision for the new book so they will know what I have in mind. And I tell them that these books will be exactly as interesting as the two of us can make the book together. And then I invite them to tell me their most interesting stories. I come home and transcribe the interviews that I have taped, and I have worked with interpreters. Thank goodness for the interpreters. I could never do this work without them. And after I have drafted the chapters, I send them back to the interpreters to read back to the women whom I've interviewed so that they can be sure, I can be sure, that in fact I've understood them correctly. They can do fact checks and correct. Usually it doesn't result in very many changes. One woman told, a shaman told me I had misspelled the name of a medicinal plant. Was glad to know that. I should have that right. But they are really very engaged, and very engaged through the process. And part of my contract with the publisher is that I get enough books to send one to each of the grandmother groups so that they can see the books. So I don't consider, I've always sort of surprised to see my own name on the cover of these books, because in fact I consider them ours, not just mine. And that includes, by the way, a lot of people in this audience who have really, really helped me with research and contacts and perspectives on other cultures, for which I am very, very grateful. So I thank you all.
special thanks to Paola Gianturco, author of Grandmother Power, A Global Phenomenon, for her comments here today. We also thank our audience here, as well as those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 109th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned.